Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hey everybody, this is Paul Dennis, and I'm speaking to you from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And welcome to episode number 6 of the Real Deadwood Podcast, a variety show for fans of the award-winning HBO Deadwood series all over the world, combining interviews, entertainment, and news from both Deadwoods. Our show today is outstanding, I think, and I think you will think it's outstanding, too, when it's all said and done. Today, we're going to start out with the Deadwood actors that visited here last summer, and this is a question-and-answer session that they did at the Bullock Hotel. Now, I know on the show they pronounce it Bullock, and that's how Sandra pronounces it, Sandra Bullock. But for some reason around here, people call it Bullock. So I guess as a resident, I've just sort of have picked that up too. And I actually mentioned that to John Hawks and I believe also Earl Brown when he was here. And I said, you know, you guys call it Bullock on the show. We call it Bullock around here. They said, well, it's too late now. You know, after a season is already over, calling him Seth Bullock, there's no way, there's no going back at this point. But so we're going to have part one of that, and then we're going to have Jerry Bryant, who is one of the Adams Museum staff people who are featured on the season one special features DVD, and he's going to be talking about the real Preacher Smith. Of course, they call him the Reverend and Reverend Smith and stuff, but around here he's known as Preacher Smith, and we'll be hearing a little bit about that. We also have part one today of my interview with Mitch Ryder. Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, who were a big group, a blue-eyed soul group from the 60s. He played here at the Cool Deadwood Nights over the summer, and I had a chance to talk to him, and you'll hear our conversation, part one. And as usual, we have Alex Kopko, who is my son and was the tour guide at Mount Moriah Cemetery, the current home of Wild Bill and Calamity Jane. We'll have the next segment of his sound seeing tour. I mentioned John Hawks before. Of course, we play Saul Starr and his band King Straggler. We have a song from them again today. I suppose you could call it a song. It's actually more like a recitation accompanied by music, but you'll hear that later, a little bit later on. And then we also are going to talk again to Chuck Turbeville, who is one of our local Deadwood officials here. And this is the final segment of my interview with him. And then we have a little bit of news to talk about at the very end. So we'll wrap things up with that. So let's go ahead and get started now. And what I'm happy about is that the sound is clearer in this in the Bullock Hotel thing, so that I don't have to sit there and transcribe all the what they say, so that you can understand it. I think it's going to be very intelligible this time, so I don't have to take that time to do that. So here we go with part one of the question and answer session with the 11 Deadwood actors who visited here last summer. Let's take it away.
Join me in welcoming half the cast from HBO Deadwood series. I want to emphasize that this is not an autograph session. This is a question and answer period. Anyone can pose a question to these characters. And I'll have Earl introduce them all.
All right. There. Sean Bridgers, he plays Johnny Burns. Titus Culliver, Silas Adams. Frank for the Giants, Samuel, Little General Fields. You all know Trixie the Horror, Paul Malcolmson. The one who has least liked their character, Robin Weigert. Jim Beamer is Whitney Conway Ellsworth. Is that it?
Bingo.
Yeah. Hawkeye Henson, Hawkeye. Kate Washington. Okay, now I'm blanking on the last name. There, it's Blazinoff. I keep saying, watch your Blazinoff. It's Blazinoff. Richard Gant is Hosteller. Peter Jason, although he doesn't have his stovetop hat, is Constable. And It's open for questions, basically. That's the purpose. Anybody have a question?
That's party. Yeah. Trixie, I'm going on the Boca Raton motorcycle.
Trixie has been invited to ride his hog. Y'all's a shot bunch. Yes.
Me? I just want to say to you, like Calamity Jane, I think you are awesome. You're amazing.
Yeah.
Titus, who's some of your favorite actors you've ever worked with?
James Bullock.
Thank you.
No. Yeah. I did a movie together. A lot of questions.
For anybody, what's your favorite episode of Z?
Favorite episode
the next or one.
Z? The next one. Anybody?
Any scene that doesn't include the word Ellsworth dying gas.
I don't know. I think our finale episode, actually both of them, about the finest hour of TV ever produced.
Yeah.
The finale episode of the first season was absolutely phenomenal. I think we equaled it this season. So, any scene you got Brad Dourif dancing in, that's a good scene. Brad bowed out. Yeah.
Do you have as much fun on the set as you have off the set here?
Yes. More. Hang around Hawkeye. Yes. That's really kind of the anomaly. I'm speaking to myself, but I was looking forward to this to see everybody. And I wish the other half could have been here. It's just, you know, everybody's so busy and scheduled, but I genuinely look forward to going to work.
If every television show I'd ever been on, the cast got along as well as the cast of this show, a lot of those shows would have been a lot more better. This is a great bunch.
The anomaly is we're not an asshole on the whole cast. Well, maybe me. You know, I'm looking out. I'm not looking in.
It's hard to see when you're inside a barrel.
And there we have some more fun from the Deadwood actors who were here over the summer. And as Jim Beaver Ellsworth said, you know, the cast really gets along well with one another, and you know, you can hear how much fun they're having and how much fun they had when they were here in Deadwood. And you heard the lady compliment Robin Weigert on her performance as Calamity Jane. And I just added to the realdeadwoodpodcast.com a nice little survey that I've been looking all over for to try to find one. I must have tried out about a half a dozen different ones until I found one that I liked. But there's a chance there for you to vote for your favorite character. And I couldn't list all the characters. I mean, like, I would have loved to have had, like, you know, Doc Cochran and Ann Doherty and some of the others there, Joni Stubbs. But the problem is that to show the results with that many characters, it was just taking too much space there on the website. So what I did is I limited it to three males and three females. So you have your choice there with Al Swearengen, Seth Bullock, or Saul Starr. And then as far as the females, you have your choice with Calamity Jane, Trixie, and Alma Garrett. So make sure you get to the realdeadwoodpodcast.com website and vote for your favorite character. Make your vote count. And we'll see how that turns out. Of course, you know, I mean, let's face it, Ian McShane's going to get most of the votes as Al Swearengen because he's the guy you love to hate. But basically, the interesting part then would be to see who comes in, you know, after Al Swearengen. Okay, let's continue on here with our next segment, and that is with Jerry Bryant, who, as I said before, is featured on the special features DVD of the first season DVD set. We're going to talk a little bit about Preacher Smith, and so here we go with Jerry Bryant. Last time we talked about the fact that on the HBO series, here's this goofy Preacher Smith dude who acts like he's half-crocked all the time.
Yeah.
And understand the real Preacher Smith did do menial labor day jobs,
mm-hmm.
and then on the weekends would try to rally the troops and and preach and everything else. But I doubt that he was quite as goofy as the way they portray him. And of course, anybody who believes that that's how he really died is in for a huge shock.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of the things, though, that that I've noticed, some of the folks on the frontier who were heavy into Jesus were a little off-center. I mean, they were a little more radical than the guys back in Philly, say, you know, or Chicago, because the folks in the towns wouldn't put up with it. So here you have this guy with may have one or two screws loose in Deadwood.
Well, and of course, Swearingen was afraid that he was going to drive away his business.
Well,
and
that's a real problem.
Want him in the place. So that, to some degree, I'm sure, the same way they didn't want Law to be in town, they certainly don't want a preacher there in a whorehouse.
That's right.
To screw up to their business.
Well, you know, that always startled people. Swearingen was blown away when Cynthia Cleveland blew into town, who was the women's Christian
Temperance thing?
Temperance League. Yeah. And she went to each and every saloon and walked in and introduced herself to the owner and then left some of her pamphlets. It was 1877, 1878, yeah. One of Cynthia's big things is she'd go in there and she'd say, well, which of these places is the worst? Mm-hmm. Which is the worst den of iniquity? Well, she chose the gem, naturally, when she was here, and scared the shit out of Swearingen because she wanted to rent it to have a temperance meeting. Yeah.
So getting back to Preacher Smith, we pretty much talked about, of course, that in real life he was not smothered by Al Swearingen. He was found dead between Deadwood and Crook City. Yep. And the speculation at the time was that the Indians had done him in.
What actually happened, as far as a family that I'm in contact with, and I'm working on the archaeology out there on their site, we're looking at the Lee Masters' homestead.
Is that out towards Crook City?
So halfway between Deadwood and Crook City, and the original home's still there. And that home, at the time, was a saloon.
We do here in Deadwood have the Preacher Smith Memorial up here on Deadwood Hill.
It's absolutely.
But it has no bearing as to where he, I mean, they just decided to put that there.
Absolutely no reference
right.
to where he actually died.
Right, it's just kind of a turnoff where people can pull over and look at this little monument.
Yeah, it's kind of
a little bit of a view, but
it's kind of a handy tourist thing. Where he died is about 3 miles from there on what was the Lee Masters place, but is now the Karstensen Ranch. Mm-hmm. And there is a big monument there put up by Butte County. Why would Butte County put something in Lawrence County? Because Butte County had all the documentation and knew that's where it happened. And it's within sight of Lee Masters' saloon, the house. And
so that's who found him? I mean, he wasn't out in the middle of a wood somewhere, and 2 weeks later someone was hunting and
he was on the side of the hill.
What's that?
No,
you know?
He was on the side of the hill.
So he was on a fairly well-traveled...
Yeah, and there was a guy coming that found him who was hauling hay to one of his dairies, and he took him into town. But
how long did they estimate after he had been killed? It wasn't within 10 minutes or something. Was it a day or two?
No. Half hour, hour, two.
Really? That's all?
Yeah, it wasn't very long. And...
Now, did he have arrows in him or just gunshots?
Bullets. And
so if it was whites, they weren't smart enough to shoot a couple of arrows into him and make it...
It wasn't like the Mets.
Huh?
I mean, the Mets made it, they made it look like it was Indian. But with Preacher Smith, the family that owns that building now, and matter of fact, two of the people I know grew up in that building, they say their oral history is that there were a couple of old miners sitting there at the saloon, at the bar, and they saw Preacher Smith coming across with a mule. And
they said, were practically eyewitnesses.
Yeah, and they said, I bet I can shoot that son of a bitch from here.
Oh, so they picked him off for target practice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Kind of a drinker.
Did they know who he was or just they didn't care?
I don't think they cared.
They just saw a silhouette and said...
I really don't think they cared.
It was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Wrong place, wrong time. Maybe it's an Indian.
Take a chance.
Yeah.
Guess he was pretty surprised just walking at what he thought in the middle of nowhere. And
I think he was more pretty dead than surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's some interesting information on... how the real Preacher Smith met his death. And, of course, you can see exactly the extent of the liberties that David Milch is taking, you know, with the way things really happened. And, of course, it's much more dramatic for Al Swearingen to have smothered him and the whole reference to Al Swearingen's brother who had the same affliction as Preacher Smith in the show as far as having had, you know, some sort of epilepsy or tumor or something. So But that's the interesting thing talking to Jerry, is to find out, you know, what is accurate in the show and what is something that David Milch has made up and has put out there for our entertainment and for the entertainment of fans all over the world. Well, if you have listened to the Deadwood podcast before, you know that when it comes up time for my musical guests, I put together a little medley of tunes and let you listen to it and see if you remember and can identify these tunes. So here we go. Well, I'm pretty sure that you've been able to identify that as Mitch Ryder. And, of course, his backup band was called the Detroit Wheels. He is from Michigan and Detroit, Michigan area. And he performed here in the real Deadwood for Cool Deadwood Nights as part of the show. You've already heard the interviews I did with Bobby V, who pretty much organized the show and was is actually the promoter for the show. And so here is Mitch Ryder and part one of my interview with him. We're here with the real Deadwood podcast. I'm here with Mitch Ryder, a legendary blues and rock and roll and R&B, and I guess you don't really have a genre, do you, anymore? You're just kind of...
You know, whatever I've become over all these years is up to the historians, really.
I guess so. Well, speaking of historians, have you been to historic Deadwood before? Is this your first trip? Or?
You know, this isn't the Deadwood I remember, but I believe I was here couple decades ago, and there were no casinos, and
right. This has only been since 1990.
Much different place.
So that was on a trip somewhere, or did you actually come here for
I think we were working out west, and we kind of just passed through.
But, have you ever seen the Deadwood show on HBO?
No, but I did watch something. I forget the title of it, but it was the story of Wild Bill Hickok. Jeff Bridges played Wild Bill Hickok.
Okay, yeah. It says here that your real name is William, is it Levice? Is that how you pronounce it? Levice?
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Yep.
And then you were Bill Lee for a while, huh? Billy Lee. And that was, and then it was what, the Four Seasons manager saw you or something?
Their producer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, their record producer.
What year was that?
65. Yeah. 64, actually.
Uh-huh. And you were how old then? Pretty young, right?
Well, I had cut my first record when I was 16, so that would have had to have been 61.
So 61 is when you cut your first record, and that's pretty much...
Not for him, though.
No, right. But so I guess you've seen a lot of changes in the music business since then. Is there anything that... is there something that you've seen that you like, and is there anything that you've seen change that you don't like?
I like the technology that's available to creative minds. And I think to waste my time talking about the negative images would be just that, a waste of time.
Yeah. Like the big business influence? Or?
That's always going to be part of our culture.
Yeah.
It's the American way. I did learn that as exciting as the business can be, it absolutely has no moral or ethical foundation.
It's all about the money.
Yeah. And then that's totally American, too.
Right.
Yeah, so. Well, I don't want to be unpatriotic and diss money, you know, because everybody needs it.
Hey, you can, you know, that's the one of the beauties of this format, that is. You can say whatever you want. You can pretty much let it all hang out on these kinds of things. And we're hoping that, you know, this will give people kind of a slice of life of the way Deadwood is. People see this, the Deadwood TV show on HBO, and a lot of people don't even realize it's a real place. They think it's just kind of a fictitious, you know, made up kind of a thing. And
No, I knew it was a real place.
I know you did.
It is very turisto now, though.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's,
well, it was then, too. It's just that now with the gaming, we have the infrastructure to kind of...
yeah, it was, but it was all about coming to see one of the old mining towns, really,
right.
You know.
Did you manage to get to the museum either then or now, Adams Museum?
No, I've never had time. It's always been on the wait from one job to another, as it is to this time as well.
Uh-huh.
This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
You bet it is. Well, let's continue on now with our weekly sound seeing segment with Alex at Mount Moriah Cemetery. Now, make sure that you check TheRealDeadwoodPodcast.com because every time we do a new show and Alex talks about another section of the Mount Moriah Cemetery, I will be adding new photos to the photo albums there on the website so that you can follow along with the tour and see what all is going on and with our tour of Mount Moriah Cemetery. So here we go with Alex.
And just next to the Chinese section here, this part that we're walking through over on the right and over in this area is the larger of two children's sections of the cemetery. You see that there are only really a handful of graves, but don't let that be misleading because in this area there are approximately 300 children buried. At the time, two really major epidemics came through, diphtheria and scarlet fever, and really took their toll on children. I guess they estimate that children were dying off at a rate of approximately 4 a day. And so in that short amount of time, parents couldn't get the money together that they needed to have a formal service for their children up here in Mount Moriah. So in the night, they would sneak up here, dig a big old hole, plop their children on in, cover them up, and walk away. And that was basically all they could do. So that's why in this area, there are so many open gaps. You know, you could say, hey, why aren't they burying people here? Because the cemetery is full, no one is able to be buried here now. They pretty much stopped at 3,400 people here, but that's why they don't dig in this area too much anymore. So we're gonna kind of backtrack our way down here a little bit. Kind of an interesting little tidbit that'll kind of buy time as we walk here is kind of the causes of death here in Deadwood. There are some pretty interesting things. I mean, you know, obviously due to the lack of modern medicine at the time, unless the cause of death was visible, I mean, you know, if you got shot, you probably died because you were shot. If you got hit by a rock, you probably died because you were hit by a rock. Lens cap. But I guess... in some of the different death records here in Deadwood, they did actually keep pretty good records. Seth Bullock was in charge of that for a while and then gave up that position when he became sheriff of Deadwood. But in some of the death records, they have people reportedly dying of a toenail in the stomach, a broken bar glass, hobnail liver. One of my favorites, softening of the brain. I don't know how really they determined that. You know, hey, your brain's softer than your brain. No way, his brain's softer than this guy's brain. And I know some people with some pretty soft brains, and they're still alive. So that just goes to show you, you know, what can you do, really? I guess the baby died from teething, which was actually pretty common back then. And my favorite was that someone literally died from God knows. I'm assuming they had a heart attack or a stroke or something. Keeled over one day, you know, hey, what happened to that guy? Oh, God knows. Hey, all right, next person, you know. So, kind of some interesting things. Also, right, I was just about to get to that. You see the sign there that says North Potter's Field. For those of you who aren't familiar with what a Potter's Field is, it's a place, it's just a mass grave with pretty much all unmarked graves where poor or unliked or unknown people were buried. You know, if someone came into town and they were found dead face down in the muck, run over by a wagon or something, and no one knew who they were, they just picked them up and threw them in these potter's fields here. Mount Moriah has three potter's fields, a north, a south, and an east. And there are just over, I think, 1,100 people buried unmarked in the potter's fields, plus about 300 unmarked children, plus the actual marked graves gives you about the 3,400 people buried here in Mount Moriah. So the potter's fields did take up a lot of the population, and mainly the people who were buried there were prostitutes at the time, the dirty, poor prostitutes who really had no one left. You know, your family disowns you and stuff like that. Now, this area that we're going to enter here is the Masonic section of the cemetery. Freemason Lodge number 7 of Deadwood purchased a little 1.5-acre chunk of land from the city of Deadwood to bury their more prominent members. Now, there were Freemasons throughout the cemetery. John Hunter, for example, was a Freemason. But I guess this is the denser collection of them. Before we go in, I just want to point out these two stones here, Mary Dawson Bennett and Granville G. Bennett. Mary Dawson Bennett was the sister of Andrew Dawson, which was why he was able to be buried here in this plot. And she was also the mother of Esteline Bennett, who wrote the book I was telling you about, Old Deadwood Days. And for those of you who have not read it, you probably should go pick up a copy and read it, because it is quite a good book. And they do sell them, actually, at the Adams Museum website, which is a good place to check out. AdamsMuseumAndHouse.org. Go and check it out, pictures of Deadwood and everything. But next to Mary Dawson Bennett is her husband, Judge Granville, or Judge Granville G, as he was sometimes referred to. He was the first judge here in town, but he didn't quite have the timing of John Hunter, because when he came into town, he had already missed the most famous trial in Deadwood's history, the trial of Jack McCall. So he kind of missed out in that whole thing. But yeah, what can you do? That's all right. On just behind Granville here on the larger light-colored granite stone is Andrew Dawson's second. And you'll kind of notice, if you look at the pictures on the podcast website, that his title now has been changed from Colonel, which was on his first stone, to General, which is now here on his second stone. And no one is really 100% sure why that is. They think it was because during the Civil War, if you had money and friends, boom, you could afford an army and you were the general. But they figured he probably didn't do enough for whichever side he fought for during the army, so he was demoted after death. But his family wanted to preserve his original status and put it on his stone there, so that is what they did.
And there we go. As usual, some more very interesting information from Alex. So now we're going to have another musical interlude here. And this is featuring John Hawks, alias Saul Starr, with his band King Straggler. And of course, you're going to want to check out their website, kingstraggler.com, and be able to find out where they're playing and where you can get their music. So here we go with a song called The Rebel.
I'm a rebel. I mean, I'm trying to be. I used to be. It's hard to be a rebel in a world where everybody's cool. In a world where everybody's on the edge, where the subcultures have been sucked up, at least the fashions, the look. In a world where long-haired yuppies ride Harleys, where preppies sport tattoos, and even preteen kids from Bel Air have been there and done that. Everybody's hip, everybody's hip, everybody's hip. The whole country's copped an attitude from sea to sneering sea. But look out, for you are what you hate. But I'm a rebel. I mean, I'm trying to be. Because I believe that the most daring, outlandish, revolutionary thing you can do in 21st century America is to treat everybody, people you know, people you don't know, with dignity and kindness whenever possible. Hey, fuck it. It's something to shoot for.
That's right, John. It's something to shoot for. Well, we're going to go ahead now and listen to Chuck Turbeville. He is the director of the Deadwood Economic Development Corporation, and he is also the representative from the Deadwood District to the state of South Dakota legislature. So we're going to go ahead, and this is the conclusion of my interview with him. And I imagine I'll be talking to him at some point down the road. But so anyway, let's hear some more about Deadwood, the real Deadwood, so that when you come here to visit, you'll know a little bit more about what's going on. And here's Chuck Turbeville. How much does Deadwood actually, what's the gross on an annual basis from gaming? I mean, if they did $100 million in August, okay, that's just 1 month, right?
Well, yeah, now the
so the overall gross of gaming from a town of 1,400 is how much?
Well, the $100 million gross, that was the drop. And that is every dollar that's put into a machine and every credit that is won. That our net to Deadwood out of $100 million is probably 1.5, 1.8 million.
But I'm saying, what's the total take for the whole tourist, like on an annual basis?
For the total year?
Yep.
You're looking at about $22 million.
Okay. I'm talking about the overall numbers how much is taken in. If $100 million was taken in August.
$100 million taken in August.
You figure there's what, we have probably about a six-month summer season, 4 or 5 month summer season. Of course, then we have a winter season too. But
yeah, I figure, you know, people ask me, and I say, well, you got three seasons. You've got four really good months. You've got four that aren't too bad, and then you've got four really slow months. So, you know, with $20 to $25 million a net, and then you take the 6.8, yet another. You know, 8 to 10, there's probably $30 to $40 million that actually comes back and circulates into the public through the net profits of the casinos and the money that goes into the state coffers and to keep Deadwood alive and working.
Mm-hmm. And how much does the state get on average? What's their benefit from having voted for gaming in Deadwood?
Well, you know, and then you get into other than the exact dollars that are extracted from gaming, you got to look at the sales tax. And the sales tax throughout South Dakota, we have a 4% sales tax. And you start adding all that together, then you're probably looking at another $50 to $55, $60 million. In sales tax, in property tax revenue, you've got your bedboard and booze tax, you've got your entertainment tax. You know, Deadwood puts a tremendous amount of money into the economy of the state of South Dakota.
That's what I'm getting at. For a town of 1,400.
That's right.
We make a major financial financial contribution to the entire state of
Absolutely.
South Dakota. And you know,
and you got to figure that, you know, on any day you can go down the streets of Deadwood, and it's lined with trucks, you know, they're unloading everything from bread to beer to linen, what have you, and all of that is included into it.
Yep.
So you're looking at $50, $60, $70 million contribution to the economy of the state of South Dakota, like you said, by a town of 1,400 people.
And we will invite everybody who's listening, no matter where you are in the world. You know, Deadwood is seen in the United Kingdom on satellite. It's in Australia now. It's in Brazil. And I believe this last season, it's in Malaysia, all over Asia. So we really, truly could have a worldwide audience here. And we certainly do invite everyone to call Central Reservation. We have when George Milos was here, he talked about how we have our you know, tourism packages with you know, transportation and lodging and everything. If you look on the internet for Deadwood Central Reservation?
Central Reservations, that's correct.
And book your vacation and your leisure time here in Deadwood. It'll be a fantastic time. You know, we have the free concerts all summer long that a lot of towns would be charging, you know, big bucks for. And, you know, I guess those are subsidized by some of this gaming money that we're talking about. Yep. Being able to have Big and Rich, you know, on a free concert downtown. Are you kidding me? That was phenomenal. What'd they say? It was like 10,000 people downtown?
Oh, we had that? For the Big and Rich concert, we figured just the people on the streets, the ones who were down the middle of the street on the sidewalk, we had between 15 and 20,000 people.
Wow.
That's on the street. And the casinos were full. So, yep. You know, and you'd have to pay $75 to $100 to see a Big and Rich concert. We provided it free of charge.
And that was... the whole thing was filmed, and right now, well, actually, today we're talking on Halloween. You know, mm-hmm. this podcast could be heard 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now. I mean, this thing will be out there on the internet forever. But as we speak, CMT is airing what they said it was going to air 17 times over the course of a couple of months. This the Wild Hickok Days Big and Rich concert, and what did they estimate that an hour of our a minute of time on CMT cost something $60,000, and then the an hour show, how many was going to be, what, $66 million or something we would have had to pay for that kind of airtime. So, you know, on the one hand, we're providing a free concert for everybody, but on the other hand, look at all the exposure and look at, you know, the benefit and the impact that that's making. But I mean, what it really boils down to is Big and Rich themselves. You know, they love this town. They wrote a number of songs in Deadwood. I mean, I imagine you were there at Wild Bill Bar that first night that Bill McDavid put him in there.
And, I was. You know,
and remember, John Rich had won money at the tables and he bought beer for everybody in the audience. And he goes, "I'm going to buy y'all a beer." And they walked around with the cases and from table to table, and everybody pulled out a beer. Yeah. And they had some of the top songwriters, some of Bill McDavid's buddies who had written for everyone from Willie Nelson to you name it. And when they there was probably five or six of these legendary songwriters there that night. And when they named a lot of the songs that these guys had written, I was just like, oh, my God, they were the top guys. And so that was quite a little coming out party for Big and Rich that night. And who knew they would wind up. They played the Deadwood Jam as like the fourth or fifth bill on the Deadwood Jam. Was it two, three years ago? And
yeah, they went.
My
they
gosh,
went from,
you know, we're we remember when, but those guys are really at the top of their game now.
Yeah, they went from singing for drinks and tips to being the top duo in the nation.
Yep, and you can't hardly go anywhere. Look at a magazine, a music magazine, or commercials, and you name it, they're there. But they are great because they talk about Deadwood every chance they get. You know, a couple of their music videos were shot here in Deadwood and have made a huge impact, you know, on TV and everything. So, and I'm hoping maybe someday they'll agree to maybe do a little interview with me here, even if it's over the phone kind of
That'd
a deal, you know. So we'll see what happens. Well, Chuck, I want to thank you very much for talking to me here today, and I'm sure our listeners will find you know, everything we've talked about here extremely interesting. And the whole idea again of this podcast is to show people that yes, there really is a real Deadwood. It's not just the thing you see on TV, you know, and it's a fantastic place. And thanks again,
Paul. Thank you for having
me. Let's do it again sometime.
Will do.
Okay,
thanks, buddy.
And there we have Mr. Chuck Turbeville. Now, I mentioned that we were going to maybe have a little bit of Deadwood news here today, and I guess today actually is January the 22nd, so depending on when you hear this podcast, it could be just about any time, right? It could be like 10 years in the future, who knows. But at the time I was talking to Jerry Bryant, which actually was last night, the interview that you just heard, he had spoken yesterday to Michael J. Kelly, who's the assistant art director of HBO Deadwood, and he had said that they were actually in the process of shooting episode number 9. So here it is, January. They're shooting episode number 9 out of 12, and the news is that that Deadwood has been or will soon be renewed for a fourth season. So they haven't even finished shooting season 3, and HBO has gone ahead and renewed the series for the fourth season. So that, of course, is fantastically good news for all of us who are fans of the show. And so I just wanted to put that out there and make sure that everyone is aware that we're going to be watching Al Swearengen and Seth Bullock and, you know, all our favorite characters for quite a long time yet. And, you know, I don't know, I guess I've heard talk that 6 or 7, you know, years would be, or seasons would be a fantastic thing. And I guess, what, The Sopranos, are they going into their 6th or 7th season? So certainly Deadwood is on a par with The Sopranos, is being compared to The Sopranos. I mean, The Sopranos are still considered HBO's number one show, and I'm pretty sure that the consensus is that that Deadwood is considered number two, right behind The Sopranos. And, of course, an indication of Deadwood's importance to HBO is the fact that they got moved back to June for the premiere because they wanted The Sopranos to be the lead-in for this new show that's going to be coming up, the show that Tom Hanks is producing, Big Love. And then they feel that Deadwood is strong enough to actually act as a lead-in also for a new show in the summer. So it's a long wait, but I'm sure it's going to be well worthwhile. And from what I've heard from the set and from what's going on right now with the shooting of Season 3, we're going to be in for some fantastic acting and some fantastic storylines from David Milch. Now, one of the characters that's going to be introduced is a guy called Jack Langrish, or sometimes known as Jack Langrish. And I did talk to Jerry in my interview with him yesterday about this character. And David Milch is going to be portraying him as a gay guy. A theater person who is bringing plays and theater, you know, to Deadwood. And there really was a Jack Langrish, and he actually did do that, but there really is no proof that he was gay. So, you know, David is spicing things up, in his genius way, is putting stuff out there that is maybe somewhat controversial. And, you know, did they really talk that way? Did they really, you know, swear that way? Did they really have gay people that way? And so he knows how to get some attention, and he knows how to keep us entertained. And the next interview I have with Jerry Bryant, we'll be talking a little bit about the real Jack Langrish, the same way that we talked about the real Peter Smith today. Well, thank you once again for being with me this time for the Real Deadwood Podcast. The music you're hearing right now is from my CD called Black Hills Gold. The tune is called Black Hills Fairy Gold. As I promised in an earlier podcast, at some point I will explain exactly what that means. So this tune can be downloaded from iTunes, just this one tune, or any number of the, I guess there's about 12 tunes on the CD. Or you can buy the entire CD from my website at pauldennis.com. Links are on the Real Deadwood Podcast website for that. Make sure you subscribe to the Real Deadwood Podcast. You can do that in iTunes or any number of podcatchers, and there are links for that on the website. See you next time from the Real Deadwood, South Dakota. This is Paul Dennis wishing you all the best.